Welcome to Hype, Hypeable.com's podcast, bringing you all the latest, the 100 news stories? That's not quite right. We bring you the latest in all entertainment news, although recently there has been a somewhat slight 100 bias. That's my bad. My name is Selena. I'm one of three hosts of Hype. I'm here this week to bring you an interview with Tree Adams, the composer of The 100 Season 4. He also wrote Season 3. And this is going to be a very fun interview. Tree Adams talks about his new season 4 scores that you can expect on the soundtrack. He talks about if the soundtrack is going to be released and how the fans can make that happen and so much more. So I really hope you like it. And if you are here for the 100 content specifically, then I really urge you to check out Hype Podcast on Hypeable.com or on Twitter at Hypeable Hype or in iTunes at our Hype podcast feed, because we have a bunch of other related coverage. We have an interview with Cass Morgan, we have an interview with the language creator David J. Peterson, and we are currently doing a watch slash rewatch of the first three seasons of the show. The two first seasons are done and we're heading to season three now, which my co-hosts are watching for the first time, so it's going to be a fun and exciting and terrifying experience. So that's coming your way, and you can find more information about that on Twitter at Hypeable Hype or on our Tumblr page, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com, which has an archive of all of our old interviews and specials. Tree Adams can be found on at Tree Adams and treeadams.com, and I'm sure you know him and follow him already. So I'm not going to say anything now, except I hope you enjoyed this episode, and please consider checking out other Hype Podcast episodes. And yeah, fun discussion coming up. Take it away, myself. So let's start by talking a little bit about you, because I would love to hear, I mean, I interviewed you via email last time, so I didn't get to ask the more sort of in-depth questions, like what are some of your influences? How did you find your way into the industry?
Well, getting into the whole film and TV thing was, it was not expected. You know, I was a fan of film and TV music growing up, obviously, but you know, I had been kind of more of a performing musician, you know, a rock guy. And I guess after about 10 years of traveling in this band, a friend of mine who was making an independent film asked me to take a crack at this project he was working on. And at that point, I had no equipment to take care of such a thing. So I ended up, you know, buying a computer and then basically, you know, trying to have to, you know, fly by the seat of my pants and figure it out as I went along. At that point, I had a couple of other ideas going. I was doing some work as a session musician. I was doing some jingle singing in New York, and I decided to move out to Los Angeles and give it a whirl there. It was just sort of a series of little breaks. You know, I think, you know, I was sending things in cold to a lot of different studios, sending songs, demos. And David Grossman from Paramount, he gave me a chance. He called me up like Friday night and he said, look, you know, if you can turn this around tomorrow morning, I have an opportunity for you to like write a theme song for a TV show. And, you know, he was like, it's on spec. There's no guarantee of anything. I said, okay, well, you know, I'll give it a whirl. I went for it. I get a call the next morning. He says, well, you didn't get the gig, but they like what you did. So, you know, the head of the show, he'll have you come in and you know, write some stuff with him because he kind of liked your ideas. And then so I kind of went in and, you know, I wrote with this guy, Jonathan Katz, who's Dr. Katz. I don't know if you remember that show. It was him. And, you know, we wrote a few songs. We thought everything was good. We sent that in. Monday morning, I get the call. Well, they're not going to use it. The head of the show, he's got his own thing. They were like, but we really like what you did. Would you think about writing music for the show, like as a composer? And I was like, you know, that would be great. So that turned into one thing. And then some of those producers a year or two later, they called me to demo for something. And, you know, it kind of went like that, where I guess I had a few breaks. I mean, I had my friend sort of brought me in to do the show Californication with him as a partner. And that went well. And, you know, I had another show or two that were sort of, you know, stepping stones along the way. And eventually, you know, after taking every possible opportunity, I had enough stuff on my reel doing, you know, more orchestral work where people were starting to take me seriously and give me a shot to do stuff, you know, with a full orchestra. But it was definitely, you know, I mean, you know, we're talking about a 10, 20 year span there.
Yeah.
So it really, I think it was about persistence and just kind of hanging in.
Yeah, because I was going to say there's a big leap from sort of, you know, playing music with a band and scoring what is essentially this big, very cinematic theme of a show.
Well, doing the band thing, it's art, you know. What you're creating mm-hmm. is the end product and the thing that's being sold. And if you work, you know, on a film or TV show, you're talking about the applied arts, which is really more where you're facilitating someone else's vision. And it's difficult because you want to invest yourself in the craft you're making. You have to, but you also have to be flexible and be able to completely change your masterpiece. You know, somebody's come in and they're like, hey, you know what? That's cool. I remember I was working on a film called Hard Luck. It was like a Wesley Snipes action thriller. And the director was Mario Van Peebles. And we've done a bunch of stuff together. And at the time he was like, he walked in, I was so proud of this like car chase, played like some 6-minute epic car chase thing for him. And he was like, you know what, man, that's a great cue for another movie.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh, I was so bummed, you know, but I realized, you know, kind of early on, like, okay, you have to, when you write this music, you have to keep the sound effects and the dialogue really loud. I used to turn it way down just so I could hear the music. But then you realize, well, you know, you're going to have to live with, or in fact, be the backup band to the dialogue, or, you know, like that's the lyric of your song. Or if the sound effects are there, if it's a car chase and like the car slams into a telephone pole, you're going to hear that loud and proud. So you might as well craft the cue around it, you know, and like leave space, figure out what area in the EQ spectrum you're going to be in, what register you want to feature, you know. If there's a big, low muscle car engine going on underneath it, you better write something up high that can kind of live with it, you know. And those types of things, it takes a little while to figure out that you need to adapt. And then even if you come up with the greatest idea and you think you've cracked the code, inevitably your producer or director, I mean, it depends on which, you know, kind of person you're dealing with, but inevitably they're going to come in and change it. So you got to be like, all right, you want to go left? Let's go left.
I, you know, honestly, like it really is a balanced act, isn't it? Because, I mean, it's definitely true that you need to let the sound effects and the dialogue speak. But I also think when you have the music sort of mulling in the background every once in a while, when it comes to the forefront is when it really hits, you know, like just speaking about The Hundred, I feel like some of the most memorable moments are when the music takes over and is the star for a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I think it goes differently from project to project. You know, with The Hundred, I've been fortunate in that, you know, the music sort of has become another character in the show. And Jason Rothenberg, the showrunner, you know, he wants to, you know, tell a story with music the same way he's telling a story. And he wants, you know, them to kind of dance together. And so I will get, you know, some moments where the music is playing pretty loud. You know, Tim Scanlon, who's one of the producers who kind of runs the mix, he'll kind of like, you know, smile and kind of say, yeah, we're going to ride you up here. You know, it's a cool thing to get that. I don't know what the word is, that kind of, you know, validation or that kind of room to spread your wings musically. For sure, within the context of a show, somebody's story. You know, and sometimes people aren't going to hear, you know, the best thing you wrote. They're only going to hear one little, you know, element of it. And that's fine because, you know, at the end of the day, we all live and die by sort of how well the story is translating and how much people are enjoying it, you know. And, you know, we're all there to kind of make a good show. So.
Mm-hmm. How much freedom do you have in The Hundred in terms of the sounds that you're allowed to express? Like, do you ever have that moment when Jason comes in and says, this is great, but that's not what I want?
Oh, yeah, sure. That happens all the time. But by the same token, I mean, because of the nature of the show, which is to say that it's, you know, it's in a future imagined and there's no preconceived notions of like, okay, well, it's not like we're like in the 1800s, like we're not in a period piece where there's only certain instruments that have been invented or there's, you know, certain melodies that would be kind of prevalent you know, like if you're like in a Roman thing, there's certain like intervals you would use. In this situation, it's a pretty wide open palette, both in terms of instrumentation and in terms of the kinds of melodies we can go to or vehicles we can use. And in fact, we use a lot of like contemporary kind of pulses and soundscape stuff mixed with all kinds of, you know, world instrumentation into all the kind of traditional orchestral stuff. So it's pretty wide open there. And yeah, I have, especially, you know, now that I've been doing it for a little while and Jason kind of, you know, trusts me and we have a little bit of, you know, rapport there with that, I do feel free to take risks. And I like that because that's when some of the best stuff happens. But, you know, if I go out on a limb, say like, you know, five times in an episode and try something really off the wall, you know, maybe a couple times I miss, you know, maybe a couple times, you know, he'll sort of like, nah, man, that's too crazy. You know, I did something the other day where I think I was like singing really low, like, you know, like Tuvan Monks, you know, I was singing, I layered a whole bunch of like crazy low vocals underneath this scene. And it was like, it just played a little too crazy. And I got shot, you know, I mean, why not? You know, you got to go for it.
Yeah. Do you plan out or do you sort of start pre-composing before they start filming? Like, do you know the full outline of the season before you start? Or do you work from scenes?
Well, you know, we get scripts as they're available. They're not all written before the season starts usually. You know, that's kind of a process. It's a whole campaign. You know, it takes them a while to get them done. Usually there's a handful of them before they even start shooting. So that's helpful. And then I try and get an arc of what is going to happen in the season, but sometimes they're still finding it, you know, but typically there's at least a general roadmap. And I try to get that information because there's certain relationships that are key. There are certain characters that take a turn and you got to know where it's going. And then usually before the season starts, I'll write a batch of thematic material that speaks to, you know, what lies ahead, a thematic suite, if you will. And then sometimes, you know, the editors will use that to cut with, or they will use that as a jumping off point when they're looking for other pieces of temp music that kind of feel in our world that will help inform me of their intentions. And then as far as the actual kind of episode by episode goes, I'll get a rough cut. I'll start writing to it. Then we'll all sit down and do what they call spotting session, which is where we kind of go over the whole episode and identify, you know, each sort of new piece of music, where it'll start, where everything should turn, things that we might want to accent. And then I will especially try and help kind of guide us toward some kind of thematic fabric. You know what I mean? So I'll be like, okay, you know, this is this sort of love here burgeoning between these two here. Let's sort of do something with that, because we know in the episode before they kissed and here now they're having some tension, or here, you know, and you kind of want to have long arcs that, you know, accompany the story. And so I will try and sort of imbue the moments with some of those themes and some of that thematic material for continuity. And at times that's sort of happening on one level. And then on the other level, there's things like tension, emotion, moments where things have to swell. You have to kind of ride all of that, which is almost like the punctuation and the flow of things. So it's sort of a multidimensional construct, and we get a lot of input sort of from the brain trust, which is Jason, as I said, Tim Scanlon, the different editors, the music editor, Carly Barber, who's been there for the whole time. And, you know, she's done a great job kind of helping craft things as things need to be adjusted. And she has a very good sense of where things ought to go with the show. So it's like a real group conversation, you know, and then I have a team of three guys who help support me, and I go and, you know, make the battle plan.
But how much, compared to last, or I guess not compared, but building on from last season, how much of your work this year is building on the existing sort of soundscape for the show, and how much are you going in and creating, I mean, obviously it's all new, but you know what I mean? Like totally new themes and stuff like that.
Well, you know, we're operating, you know, in a world now that we've kind of established. So I think there's a certain amount of it that sure is going to be the same. I think we do have new characters, some new relationships, some of the old characters, even though they have a relationship, that relationship has changed a little bit. And so, yeah, the some of the themes we have morph, some of our palette is intact, but we're bringing in some new things. There are also some new dynamics this season, and that I certain things I can speak about, but you know, things that are happening in the world that are new. So we have to introduce like a whole new flavor for them. And, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about the show is it's like, it's the same world, but it's really changing. And it's, so every season you get kind of new, you know, you get to breathe new life into it sonically and thematically.
Right. That's one of the things I was going to say, actually, is that obviously this season, you're basically the whole season is building to this impending nuclear apocalypse. And I'm wondering as a composer, how do you musically represent that? You know, what does a nuclear apocalypse sound like?
Well, that's funny. At the beginning of the season, as I said, you know, when I looked at the story arc and some of the new dynamics, that was one of the, I sat down to write a theme called the end of the world theme. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, the way I have it, I mean, I have some strings that are doing a motif that are pretty severe and obviously fraught with emotion and finality. They're, you know, bass, piano, octaves, just giving you, you know, that really freaking someone just died kind of thing. And then and I've got like this weird undulating synth bass that's like pretty distinct and wiggly and kind of, I don't know, it's just weird. I was just tweaking some oscillators and got something that felt really kind of unsettling. And I was like, all right, that's my guy.
Yeah, that sounds like the show.
Yeah, stuff like that, you know. It's you know, and then little bits of that will, yeah, you'll feel it, you know. Sometimes you get just one element of it. Sometimes you get all of the elements of it. But, you know, this is what happens when you start having, okay, say you have a couple of characters who are in a relationship and they're talking about their relationship. And then another character comes over and then they're all talking about the end of the world. And while that happens, like, you know, one of the bad guys shows up and you've got a theme for every single thing going on there. And the end of, and they're talking about the end of the world. Like, how do you put, you know, five themes together? And does it make sense to do that? At a certain point, you know, I'm pulling my hair out because I'm like, all right, I can't like do every theme at once. It's not going to serve the story. So, you know, you have to kind of pick what you're going to feature when and how.
But I want to talk a little bit more specifically about the character themes, because obviously I feel like when you're finding the character sound, I mean, obviously, you know, you're digging really deep into who they are and what they're going through. And I think in season three, especially, like there were a bunch of different themes that represented different parts of maybe who Clark is and who the Juanita thing, especially, but also the relationship themes. So, I mean, how do you find that? How do you find a character's sound?
It's these situations they're in, you know. Sometimes, for instance, you know, we have a character. I can speak about it because it's already aired a couple times. We have this new character, Echo, right? She's sort of the, you know, right hand woman of Rowan, and you know, she's almost got this like Darth Vader theme going once in a while. Like once in a while I'll do like almost like military snare drum kind of stuff,
but right.
And then I'll do these kind of like staccato brass things, like you know, these sort of little, you know, Wagnerian like triplet brass staccato things for her. But that just happened because she kept arriving in these kind of military situations. And I was like, all right, well, that's just going to be her thing. And then we have a little melody that goes with her, but it doesn't always call for a little legato lyrical melody when, you know, they're in an urgent, like fighting situation. So it becomes like the story dictates kind of how a thematic thing is going to guide, you know, what we do for a character. I know, for instance, like a lot of people have said, well, you know, why didn't you just write a theme for Lexa? You write a theme for all these other people. Why don't you write a theme for Lexa? And I'm like, well, last season, Lexa, for the most part, her character, it was sort of all about her relationship with Clark. And it dominated a lot of what Clark was about too. And in fact, that was like the main focus of, that was probably like, you know, the biggest thematic thing that I came up with in the season was the fabric for those two. And so, you know, it's like sometimes the character and their position within the story is dominated by a certain dynamic, whether it's a relationship or like, you know, that they're always in a fighting situation or, you know, it's so, you know, they don't, every character doesn't always need to have like a melody that's like a singing legato line or something super memorable. Sometimes it's just a texture. So I think it's really, the story is what dominates the situation.
One of the most interesting characters for me so far this season, having also watched episode 3, is Octavia, because I think her energy right now, which is also something that really comes across in the music and in Marie's acting, is just this underlying tension, you know, like she's so calm, but she's really not, you know, like there's this, she's vibrating almost. And I feel like that comes out in the music too. Can you speak a little bit about her sound, as it were?
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention her, because she's the one who I think has transformed the most so far this season. Her character is really exciting this season. She's unhinged, you know? And, yeah. And so what you've got there musically with her is now, I mean, basically like this kind of cold-blooded killer has come out. And so we have this sort of treacherous, like assassin motif for her. And it's just like a dark, gigantic horn theme we've got for her that you hear her over and over again. And then we'll play it sometimes when she's sneaking around, you know, on lighter instruments. Like we'll play her same motif. If you listen quietly, we'll play it on a harp or something like that, you know. But yeah, she is really exciting this season. I can't, you know, I can't speak more about what's happening down the line, but what you've been seeing so far, good stuff.
Yeah. you know, it's so amazing because, I mean, obviously the secrets should not be revealed at all, but you're the third person that I've spoken to from the show who's like, yes, Octavia's story, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. Like, I don't know why, obviously, but for some reason, everyone's really hyped about Octavia, and it gets me really hyped, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like everybody has their moments, you know. I mean, there's a really good group of characters on the show, and I think they go in and out of, you know, one person's story. But hers is a lot of fun this season for sure.
Yeah,
maybe the most fun.
So am I right in sort of beginning to identify a few notes of what could perhaps be a cabbie theme coming up?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the cabbie contingent out there, they're always kind of – I feel bad because I didn't put the Kane and Abby you know, there was a little bit of a romantic thing with them last year. Like they had this one kiss. There was like a couple of moments. They didn't last long. They were always – sort of having a conversation that was like, you know, an intimate conversation that was then interrupted by the urgent matter at hand or some battle situation, or, you know, they were chipped and having a conversation that was like where they weren't themselves. And so while there was sort of the seeds of a love theme, I think it was a little bit, yeah, it was just shortened, you know, at times. So I didn't really have enough of a thing for it last season to put it on the soundtrack. It was almost in there, but a lot of people were like, why didn't you put it on the soundtrack? And I'm like, come on. But let's just say there is enough of it this year.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, I think, and I know the fans, the cabbie contingent will be happy.
I know I will be happy, but I like the cabbie thing in general because it's such a nice, I feel like everyone can get behind it, you know, like it's just a really lovely story, at least so far.
Yeah, no doubt. They do a good job of kind of like, you know, having this sort of duty to take care of the, you know, the group, and they're kind of the parents, you know.
Yes.
I mean, literally. And so I guess, you know, it's good to see them having kind of their own vibrant love thing going on.
Yeah. It's a nice balance to all the sad drama and death and destruction.
Sad drama, death, destruction, yeah. Young people. Yeah.
But so I also wanted to ask you, because in season three, obviously, there were a lot of things going on with the soundtrack, but the two main things were sort of the, obviously, the alley music and also the grounder music. They had some actual diegetic music. They had drums and they had the grounder anthem. Is that something we're going to hear at all in season four?
You know, there's a number of rituals that you get, you know, in the world there. They have like, what is it like, you know, conclaves and ascensions and all these things that you've heard about. And so in some of those sort of tribal rituals, yeah, you get more of the, you know, what you're calling diegetic, the basically visual source music. And I remember the grounder anthem, I think, also accompanied one of those scenes last season. I'm not sure what we've got in store with the rest of the season as far as, you know, if there's any more of these grounder songs or any of that kind of, I think so far, no. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as, you know, the new stuff that's happening, you know, obviously there's the end of the world coming. They're trying to sort of, that's what's driving this season, really. They're just trying to figure out how to survive. And there's a number of places that they have to go to figure that out. You know, I can't really speak to what's coming.
Oh, no. And I don't even really want you to, because we need the surprises. But sort of going off of that question, though, this is something that I also asked David J. Peterson, because this is going to get really nerdy, I'm so sorry, but I'm really interested in the grounders, and I'm really interested in their in the development of their culture and sort of the history behind them. And I'm wondering, I spoke to David about how their language developed, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on like how their music developed, you know, what music survived and what instruments survived for them and why?
Well, it's funny. We've had this exact conversation, you know, when coming up with the grounder anthem, my question to everybody was like, well, did they have to reinvent music? Like what do they know of music? And you've seen like, there's a piano around, they find a piano. So that's got to give them some segue into kind of Western scales and stuff like that. But I think the thought was that it's like a polycultural soup, kind of, you know, like a globalized, like all of the different musics and all of the different instruments. Imagine that they've all kind of been melted in this future, and that it's a little bit more of a wide open palette, which I think is where things are heading. I mean, on some level, I mean, because of the globalization of the economy now and the internet being what it is and people having access to all different kinds of music. I mean, we've seen the proliferation even within Western music. You got hit songs coming from India. You've got people having hit songs and freaking, you know, singing in Korean. You know, there's all of these different things that are in, you know, cross-pollinating in pop culture. And I think ultimately that's probably where it's all going. All of the different instruments in the palette will kind of blend. I think all of the languages, all the stylistic rhythms and everything is going to kind of melt into one big pot. And I think that's probably, when thinking about sort of where the grounders are at, I think that's how we envision it, you know, that they've got but a much more primitive version of it all, though, you know, because they've had to start again. But I think the idea being that they found some instruments lying around, or like even when they have these conclaves, you hear the horn, you know, it actually sounds like a shofar. And it's like, you know, they've found all of these instruments lying around and they've had to kind of like start from scratch. They probably, you know, every once in a while, like for instance, in the last episode, they were singing along to some music, right? There was a I Don't Like Mondays was on.
Yeah.
So they've got to have some access to some music somehow. So I don't know. I think it's sort of primitive, but it's also like the walls have been broken down. There's not like rock radio, hip hop radio, world music. It's not, they're not in bins. It's like,
right,
they've got access to everything kind of in a way. That's how I see it.
Right. That's a really good point. And that's actually really interesting because I feel like a lot of those sort of sci-fi future culture blend shows like Battlestar Galactica and Firefly, you know, especially like they do mix music like that. They mix sounds and they mix cultures through the soundscape, which is really adds a lot, I think.
I agree. I think it's great. I mean, and we do that with the score. We're playing all these, you know, I got like an Egyptian oud going on. I've got, you know, freaking Persian drums, you know, I'm putting in all kinds of stuff from all over the world because I think that that's what happened. The walls have all come down. The bins are gone. All the instruments are lying around and everybody's just kind of like from the dust, something new rises, you know?
Mm-hmm. How would you classify the sound of the season?
Well, again, I mean, it's hard to classify because the bins are gone.
That's true.
I mean, I think it's still very dark. I think, you know, you have a lot of emotion and a lot of sort of high stakes stuff with all the orchestra stuff we have in there. And it's pretty exotic sounding. I'm using a guitar viol throughout, which is basically kind of like a guitar that you play with a bow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's creating a lot of kind of weird organic soundscape stuff that is, I don't know, it's pretty unique sounding. It's hard to classify exactly how it all is here. I mean, it's epic and it's dark. Same as it ever was.
Right. Can we expect any? Because obviously, like, I don't want to. I'm expecting this season 4 track soundtrack is going to be made available at some point.
We're working on it. I hope so. It probably will be. That's the thing where, like, I gotta get Warner Brothers to do it. Half of the battle there is just sort of like showing that there's an audience for it. So, like, last season. Right. There were a lot of people who expressed interest in getting the soundtrack. And I was able to kind of like show that to Warner Brothers. Sabrina, who helps me out, she was like, look, there's a bunch of people who want to hear the music. Let's do something. And Warner Brothers was like, all right, let's do it. So we'll probably do the same thing this year and see, you know. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a soundtrack. What I'd like to do is to be able to release something on vinyl. I think that would be really fun.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
There've been a lot of people interested in that, and I think that would be the best result. So we'll do what we can.
That would be amazing, yeah. But and then I was just going to ask to that. I mean, are there any names of themes that have already been played in these first couple of episodes that you can reveal that aren't like spoiling anything?
Maybe so. Well, it's funny in this week's episode, there was a moment. And I think I sent out a tweet. I said, Bellamy's Choice. And then and they were like, oh, that sounds like a good one for the soundtrack. And I was like, yeah. So maybe that's a good one. You know, Bellamy is, you know, he's sort of gone in and out of being like a hero and being like he's made some bad choices, I guess. So there's definitely some good stuff for him this season. But no, I mean, I haven't gotten that far in terms of naming the, you know, the things. I bet there will be a cabby one. Let's say that.
Oh, yes. That's all we really want. So that's good. Cabby on vinyl. That's the dream. Bellamy's Choice. I was going to ask you a little bit about the show in general. I'm not going to ask you that much, but I was just wondering, cause I see a lot of people talking about that. And I was actually expecting us to be talking about Clark lying, but everyone's like, oh, did Bellamy make the right choice? Did he not make the right choice? What do you think?
It's a tough choice. And and as I have said before, you know, heroes always have to make the tough choices. I guess we'll see, right? It you know, how did it all turn out in the end? So I don't know.
It's an interesting debate, though. I only ask because I'm like, I'm really curious how, because I saw that episode and I was just like, oh, well, obviously that's what he had to choose. And then I said that on Twitter and people got mad at me. So,
well, it's, you know, you're choosing to save one little group there and you're feeling for those people and there's all this emotion as they look at them, these, you know, slaves who've been mistreated, and you could save them or you could save the human race. You know, all right, he chose to save them, but then I don't know, maybe there's another way to save the human race, right?
Let's hope so. We'll see. Okay, so I want to wrap up. Just I have a couple of fan questions that I wanted to get through from your fans, who almost all of them added to their question, just make sure you tell him how much we appreciate his work. So I have to make sure I tell you that.
Okay.
A lot of interest. It's really great to see. So Michaela wants to know, sky people or grounders, who's more fun to write for?
Probably the grounders. It's grounders are a little more gritty. Sky people, there's all this emotion and, you know, heroic stuff. But the ground people, the grounders are, the grounders are more fun, I think.
Mm-hmm. Allie asks, who are your favorite characters?
Well, I love bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some favorite bad guys over the years. I guess this season, maybe Octavia. Octavia is my favorite one this season. They're all good, though. I'm a fan of Raven's, you know, because I like this sort of tech thing she's got. She reminds me so much of Scotty on Star Trek.
Mm.
You know, and she's like,
interesting.
She's got this thing of her own pain that she's dealing with. So, you know, she's got some power as this tech kind of, you know, genius or whatever. And then she's got this pain that I like. And then, you know, obviously Clark is kind of obvious because she's just, you know,
yeah,
she's super strong and she's got to make all the tough choices and there's all this emotion there. And she can also be treacherous, you know, which is fun. Yeah, I like them all.
All of them. Yeah, that's my choice, too. Usually I end up just listing them all because they're all so good. Kel wants to know, are there any certain instruments you identify with each character?
Definitely. I mean, at times, there's a lot of cross-pollination. So, yeah, from time to time, we will, you know, it's not like one character always gets the same thing. But, yeah, I mean, Clark gets the solo cello a lot, that's for sure. I do feel like, you know, Bellamy gets a lot of piano. We've got Indra gets this dulcimer, like a hammered dulcimer a lot. You'll hear that on her. Roan gets these horns playing like kind of like a Roman fifths moving interval. Yeah, so I mean, there are definitely, yeah, like, or as I said, with Echo, for instance, she's getting this kind of military snare with these brass staccatos. Definitely.
So, yes.
Yes.
And Yolanda wants to know, how much or how has the Belarc theme changed or evolved with the new material you've been given this season? Is there going to be a Belarc reprise theme this year?
All right, well, here's the Belarc of it all. Like, right, because I got in trouble a little bit last year by sort of like putting the Belarc out there. Like, I, you know, because everybody wants to know if Bellamy and Clark are going to be together. Right. So I can't be speaking to like whether or not they're going to be together or they're not together or anything like that. But they always, I've always said, like, you know, they have a relationship, right? It's, you know, it's,
yes.
I mean, they're, you know, the nature of that relationship, I will not speak to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, by all means, there has always been some thematic material for them in their relationship. And that will continue throughout this season. And it certainly evolves because, you know, that's a very crucial relationship, whether it's a friendship or, you know, however you want to characterize it. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's funny because obviously last year, like calling them Clexa and Belarc themes, I mean, I get it. but I also think, I mean, it's true and it's always going to be true that Bellamy and Clark, like the nature of their relationship is one thing, but it's, I mean, for sure, the two of them are in this together, as it were, like when it comes to being leaders and saving the world and stuff. So I think just it is tough. It's tough to speak about with the shipping of it all. But I think it's that saying they have a relationship is sort of a given.
Yeah, definitely. I think the issue was last year because of the Clark-Lexa relationship and the fans of that relationship it became kind of a loaded thing to talk about Clark in any other relationship, like as if, you know, having a, it almost, you know, you had this sort of pitted of like the Balark versus the Clexa world. And I just sort of like, you know, I didn't want to really play into any of that, that kind of conflict. You know, I am just writing music for characters, and all of those people, all those characters have relationships with each other that I have to score musically. And I don't have like any kind of like, you know, agenda politically.
No, it's a tough situation, but I think, I hope people understand that. And my final question is from Kelpie, who asks, which album would you save from the apocalypse?
Which album would I save for the apocalypse, you mean?
like I think she means like take it with you if you were saved. I don't know.
Right. Keep one album with that's a good question. That's a very tough one.
Not that that's hard or anything. Like which one do you save for future species?
I would take a Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee record.
Okay.
Probably, I think it's called Better Day. Because it's simple and it's probably the most cheerful thing that could get me through when I needed to keep my morale up.
That's nice. That's a good answer. And then I want to finish off now by asking what I always ask when we have someone on Hype Podcast, which is how do you hype? How we hype is the segment. It means what are you enjoying in pop culture this moment? What are you a fan of?
In pop culture now, what am I a fan of? I don't know. I can't say I'm all that tuned into pop culture. I'm just a humble musician gnome in my in my cave. Certainly not what's happening in American politics.
Mm. Well, you're also scoring music for Lethal Weapon.
I've been really enjoying writing, you know, music that is the polar opposite of The 100, which is, you know, basically cop music. Wisecracking buddy cop music for Lethal Weapon, which is, you know, sort of a new hit series on Fox. And we've had so much fun doing, you know, the kind of you got your action scenes and your shootouts and your car chases and all that. And then, you know, one of the characters, Riggs in particular, the guy that Mel Gibson played in the movie, his character has a really good kind of emotional side to it. We do a lot of these sort of guitar collages for that, basically, which are sort of sound effects. I'm using like, you know, six different delay pedals and all kinds of crazy textures. And, you know, just it gives me a chance to be really creative with the guitar, which I like. And then, you know, I think there's a lot of humor in it too, which is fun. So we get to kind of play some grooves and, the show has a surprising amount of heart. I think Matt Miller, the creator of the show, he's done a great job kind of steering, you know, through that kind of like action and procedural thing, but then also imbuing the show with, you know, something you can really relate to and feel. And the characters, you're rooting for them. You know, Riggs and Murtaugh, the two guys, they have a good relationship with each other, and they've each got their own kind of soulful thing going on, you know. And the Murtaugh character is played by Damon Wayans. He plays, you know, does an excellent job, like kind of as the straight man. And, you know, it's funny and it's got heart. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. I'm so sorry that I kept you this long. I didn't realize. That's my bad.
I'm chatting.
Yeah, it was so much fun. I'm going to let you go now. And I don't know if you just want to quickly tell people where they can follow you on social media and stuff, if they're not already.
Sure. I mean, it's very simple. It's, you know, I have a website, treeadams.com. On Twitter, I think it's just at treeadams. Facebook, treeadams.
Yep, that's easy. Okay, thanks for the talk. This was great.
Indeed. Great chatting with you.
All right, that brings us to the end of the interview. Thank you so much to Tree Adams for sticking around and answering all of our questions. I hope that everyone enjoyed that. Don't forget to check out hyperbole.com, which is hyperbole.com, for more like this. And check out Tree Adams and all of the different outlets that he provided. And make sure to tune in to The 100 Season 4, which airs on The CW at 9, 8 Central on Wednesday nights. Have a great week, everyone. See you back for the regular show. Follow Hype at Hypeable Hype on Twitter. My name is Selena, and that's the end. Bye, guys.